The insurgent senatorial campaign of Beto O'Rourke in 2018 brought a lot of national attention to Texas and has fueled speculation that the political ground might be shifting in this historically conservative state. A documentary that's nearing completion has been capturing these shifts. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The documentary film, Kind of Blue, has been exploring the demographic and social movements in Texas that are driving political change in the state. A lot of the film's narrative threads intersect in El Paso. Kind of Blue is directed by Kevin Ford, and I'm happy to have him back on the program today. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
You're joining us by phone from Los Angeles, but I should mention right off the top that you are producing this film independently with your wife, Emily Ford. And full disclosure, I've been watching you put this film together for quite some time, and I've even given a little money to your GoFundMe campaign. So I believe in the project, and I'm happy to have you back. I think last time you were in the studio, it was about a year ago, and you were just finishing covering the Beto O'Rourke campaign for Senate.
Yes. When I first came and met you, I had been filming Beto's campaign, but also Veronica Escobar, which is one of the things that brought me to El Paso, as well as many other folks in the region.
And you've been crisscrossing the state even back then, capturing different perspectives on the changing demographics here.
Definitely. We tried to hit northeast, southwest, and central by a rental car.
A lot of miles. So you've been casting a really wide net. And we talked last time when you were on the program about your previous film, American Chaos, where you deeply embedded yourself with some Trump supporters in the run-up to the 2016 presidential election, you know, allowed them pretty unfiltered views to get out in that film, just really trying to capture the mindset and the background of people who supported that campaign. Is Kind of Blue sort of a bookend to that film?
It really is. And I'll just try to be concise about it and say there was an opportunity to go out on the road and make a documentary with a really good friend, Jim Stern. And that was the Trump supporters. And we called it American Chaos, but it was before, during, and after the election. So the movie ends with the inauguration of Trump. And as you stated, we tried to show them in their own words, no trick editing, and just kind of a real time capsule of what that movement was and what was happening. Now, of course, I'm on the other side of the aisle of your typical Trump supporter, but we wanted to show it. We wanted people that didn't agree with Trump to see a non-news media, non-soundbite kind of version of what these people really were thinking and feeling, with an emphasis on the fact that we're all Americans, so let's try to listen and understand what's happening. And the movie, if you haven't seen it, or if somebody listening hasn't seen it, they can find it, American Chaos. It's got a beautiful kind of impassioned plea at the end for people to kind of not let their country go on this incredibly divided path. Over a year later, after the film had been released, I was with Jim Stern, who I made that film with, and Eric Schlosser, and the topic came up of Beto O'Rourke and what was happening in Texas. I lived in Texas for 10 years. And my ears perked up and I said, wait a minute, what's going on down there? And honestly, I'd been a little bit out of the loop. There was some talk of like, well, maybe we should send Kevin down to Texas to see what's going on. We contacted Rick Linklater, who I've worked with extensively. He's a good friend. Asked if he had any intel of what was going on with Beto and kind of this upswell of Democratic voters in Texas. And basically, he got back to us and said, you know, there is something going on. And he said, also, I have friends that are making a film literally about Beto O'Rourke and his campaign. And I said, ah, damn, okay, well, there's no reason for me to come down. And this was great. Rick says, but I think there's a bigger story here. And if you're willing to look at a long view of it over time, I think you're going to see that this is bigger than any one campaign, any one election. This is a general trend in Texas towards turning blue, and you're going to see it in average folks, people that aren't even running for office. And he mentioned a bunch of people that he was inspired by back during the midterm election. It was that, and I was on a plane down and actually set up a kind of a base camp on Richard's property on Bastrop outside of Austin, and then kind of put my film gear there, and I would just kind of, in my rental car, go out.
Like and, the spokes on a wheel.
Yeah, go out. And then come back with the harvest. We would talk about the story, talk about the characters, you know, Richard is amazing, obviously, at telling character stories. You know, all of his films are like that. So he would say, I think that's a really interesting thing. Maybe you should look at this. And then our other producers got involved. Everybody, Emily, Eric Schlosser, Jim, who I made American Chaos with, he came on board. And everybody kind of guided it in their own way. Like the most incredible group of creative mentors, everybody just doing it just to do it. There was no deal in place, no funding. And that's, we just kind of did it completely grassroots. And there was no time to set up a film, to have development, to pitch the idea. I mean, this was just happening in real time.
But it,
and that's
it
about
must have
when I met you.
That must have taken quite a leap of faith to have such a long timeline and develop an epic story, which is you're capturing more than just a campaign. Whether it's the Beto O'Rourke story for the Senate or the Trump campaign, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, they either win the election or they don't, as opposed to trying to capture a spirit of a state and something that's moving underneath at the grassroots level and shape that. I presume you just had to be open to following these lives and these stories wherever they took you?
Absolutely. It was a lot of word of mouth, a lot of instinct, intuition. You know, I have the Rough Cut playing as we talk just for inspiration. And one of the characters on screen right now is a woman named Mariana Wright, who runs the National Butterfly Center down in McAllen, Texas. She is someone who was not an activist. She ran a butterfly center, a place where kids would come to learn about butterflies and nature. But because of Trump's wall, she was put in a position to become an activist, to become a protector of the land. And for almost a year now, she's been fighting to keep the wall from destroying the butterfly center and the protected wildlife there. And it's a great example of you get a lead and you go follow and you meet her. A year later, so far, I'm happy to report, they've been able to keep the wall from devastating the National Butterfly Center. And they're not saying, okay, it's never going to happen. But every step of the way, Mariana is fighting. And there's a lot of people like that that have nothing to do with running for office, no political campaign, just an average citizen put in a terrible situation. And, you know, her story, I find a lot of inspiration from, and there's a lot of people like her in this film.
How many of those stories are you tracking or you think will make it into the film? Because I gather you probably have hundreds of hours of footage that have to be somehow compacted into a digestible format.
You know, I feel that there's about eight main characters that have emerged over the course of that time. And really, I hope that she's not uncomfortable with me saying that, but because she's not a character. These are also real people.
Right.
I mean, you're hearing a filmmaker, and I don't know how to describe it. These are real people. They're not characters. But in the sake of the documentary, the people that emerged, I'd say there's about 8 to 10 of them. And one of the leads that really just blew my mind is Veronica Escobar of El Paso. When we first see her in the film, she's going door to door with her flyers, knocking on doors and asking people for their vote. And you juxtapose from that to a year later where she's standing up in the face of a terrible massacre and leading her community and consoling people and fighting the president. I mean, it's mind-blowing. For me to be able to follow that was a privilege, and to just see someone also who was a first-time member of Congress, part of a historical wave of new Congress members.
And the first Latina from Texas to be in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. To see that, I mean, that there was no anticipating that when someone actually close to you, it was you, that said you should talk to Veronica Escobar after our last interview.
It's a special thing, I think, and rare in the documentary world that someone gets as much time as you've had to follow this story, where I imagine there are people you interviewed 18 months ago just starting out trying to figure out what this was going to be about, that the things that they are interested in or that are compelling them to move beyond just being a quiet citizen and be an activist, that you have the time and the breadth that you've been covering this to see how all of that plays out.
Can I tell you about two others that just totally inspired me? There was these young women I met at the Texas Tribune Festival, Becky and Ashley, and they have a partner, Kristen. And I met them because I was told, hey, here's some young women that have quit their corporate jobs in marketing, and they're helping progressive campaigns. Hmm. So I met them, I interviewed them, we talked, and then we became friends, and I followed them over time, and they were talking about how they just weren't unfulfilled with their careers, but they had the skills from their careers, again, in marketing and things like that. But they decided to put that to use for causes and campaigns. Again, tracking them over time, them out knocking on doors, you see them in their community doing different things. What it ultimately leads to is these young women form their own podcast. They really take control of their lives. And next thing you know, at the end of our film, you see them, they have this podcast they've launched. They've got Wendy Davis on their show. They've got all kinds of political figures coming through. So what started as an idea, even for them to just kind of get involved and change their life, you see how almost a year later, they've taken radical steps to actually make change and influence people through media. Like, I don't think I'm doing a good job describing it, but it's really amazing.
There's an arc of a story there.
Yeah, just like all of it. When we all met and did that first interview, and I kind of was filming them in downtown Austin, I wouldn't have predicted that a year later, you know, they would have a really awesome podcast called The Rapple. And it's good.
From what little I've seen, and I should mention that you're actually editing the film with an El Pasoan, Zach Passero, and he's working on it here, and you're working on it there, and you're trading the edits back and forth. So I've seen a little bit of the footage, but I'm curious, as you've developed these relationships and over time with these various people and characters in the film around the state, you have this contrast between these really big forces, governmental forces, global forces really affecting individual lives and how people are responding to that individually. I'm wondering if there's certain themes that develop that's really motivating people. Is it the border and immigration issues that Texas is at the front line of with this administration? Is it climate change? We have heat waves and droughts and hurricanes,
yeah.
The tariffs, how they're affecting business here. Texas at the lower end of health insurance coverage in the country. Is there one thing driving it, or is it multiple things that people are responding to here?
What's really interesting is that if you had asked me that a year ago, which when I first began or so, I thought I was going to be covering every single issue like in a list, you know, healthcare, reproductive rights, environment, economic division, you know, racism, is everything. I thought we would neatly cover each thing. Mm-hmm. Yet you follow the story, and who could have predicted the way that the administration in the last year single-handedly the border to become an issue? It's like every time we would almost try to have another conversation in Texas or as a nation, oh, there's a crisis at the border. Oh, now it's a national emergency. Mm-hmm. Sending the military. Somehow, actually, by looking at this long view of it, it's almost like as an attempt to distract us from everything else that needs to get done. Oh, there's just another crisis at the border. And so the film does reflect that. And yet you hear the characters and you see that people have multiple dimensions and they want to talk about climate change. So even, you know, it's mentioned in the film, they want to talk about abortion rights or reproductive health rights. A lot of these topics come up, but it keeps getting usurped, I think is the right word, by the ongoing border crisis, which it seems the administration is doing on purpose when you kind of track it over a year. It's just like this thing that happened. So when I saw the first rough cut of the film down in El Paso with Zach, what happened was really amazing. When I saw it finally assembled, I mean, 150 hours, and we had it down to just under three. That kind of on a timeline, and it was very crude, but we could see a shape of a story there. And I thought, oh my God, the film is about people all across Texas fighting bigotry. And I say bigotry with a capital B, because really under that is all the different issues. You know, it's like kind of just people who are marginalized or oppressed or, you know.
Yeah, it's class, it's race, it's misogyny, it's
sexuality, yeah, like
the other. It's
yes, yeah. I would include, you know, every issue kind of seems to be falling under that, but every character seems to be kind of on their heels fighting back all across the state in different ways. And I thought, well, that's interesting, and that has carried on well after the midterms, and that gets into where this film I think could be a huge inspiration. I hope is when you see people, even after Beto lost, everybody decided to triple down and keep working harder. The characters in our film, I mean, you see them actively decide, you know what? We came close. We can do this. And you see that push to 2020. And I think there's an incredible inspiration in that. I mean, I'll tell you this much, man. I'm racing out there as early as possible in 2020. Take it around to community centers, to town halls. Take it out on the road and let it have life and let it inspire voters and people to see, hey, my voice does matter. Look at what's happening with the characters in the film. They're standing up and they are changing their lives and they're changing other people's lives.
Yeah, it is amazing when you talk about, and we've talked in the past about, there's been a lot of coverage of specific parts of this story, like the Beto story, or particularly now that he's running for president, or Veronica Escobar, where crews will drop in for a month and profile them and then make their film. But you are the only one that's been out there through the last 18 months sort of documenting at a ground level all of these varying threads to the story. And I guess there's tremendous benefit to that because of the bigger story you can tell. But the flip side is the pressure you must feel because you've captured this lightning in the bottle and you've got to get it out quickly. So what is the plan? I know you just launched a GoFundMe page for completion funds. You're basically at the end of the production phase. Is that right? You're not really shooting a whole lot more. You're mostly focused on getting the film in some sort
exactly.
of form.
Exactly. As of today, right now, we have about a 3-hour cut. We've got original music by Joseph Cash that's tracking through the film. So we're working in score. I'm editing in archival. As you mentioned, Zach Passero, he and I are working in tandem at record speed because we just feel there's no time to waste. We have to get the message out as soon as possible. And, you know, look, in another sense, if this was a fiction film, like an indie film I had made or something, I would love to actually take my time editing it. But I feel like right now we're all working overtime, self-financed, and we just got to get it done. We got to get the message out there. And you mentioned the GoFundMe, and it's interesting. Along the way, I think in the back of my mind, I'd always hope, hey, we'll get a producer or a company to partner with or a financier. And it never really happened. I kept having to shoot. I kept having to rough cut. And we just ended up here, and I've got this whole film. And so it kind of seems like, well, we came all this way just scraping together on our own, you know, and I have a guerrilla film background, so it helps. I have the equipment. You know, we were able to keep the costs really low and just get out on the road and capture the story. So now we're literally in the edit, and I'm raising enough money to get us through. And it's almost like with the additional funds that we're raising now, we can speed up the edit because I can get more hands on it. I can get a graphics guy involved. I can get a sound mixer involved, and all that kind of stuff. So it's a cool thing. And now I kind of look back and think, well, I'm glad no corporate interest got involved or some company, because it actually feels appropriate to this film that it's about average citizens and about people, and it's kind of being made from that same kind of source. Like, people right now are fueling us. So many friends, strangers, family members have just chipped in a little bit. A couple people put in a lot, and it's a night and day difference. And I kind of think, I wish we had done it sooner, but you can't think that way. So I think, well, it's the right time now, and we're definitely marketing well, and that's really the whole point.
Fantastic. Well, I've been impressed with the scope of this project and the nuance that you're striving for, and I really hope all goes well as you wrap the film up, and hopefully we can all watch it soon. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, Kevin.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your support.
I've been discussing the documentary film and work in progress, Kind of Blue, with the film's producer and director, Kevin Ford. Kind of Blue explores the social, political, and demographic changes happening around Texas, including in El Paso, and how these shifts might be a forerunner to wider national political change. Kind of Blue is an independent feature documentary which is finishing its post-production in El Paso this fall and is raising completion funds through a GoFundMe campaign. For more information on the film or to help contribute to its completion, log on to GoFundMe.com and type Kind of Blue in the search field. For more of my conversation with Kevin Ford about his film Kind of Blue, log on to the On Film archive at ktep.org. On Film's engineer is Seth Van Meter. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.